about 35% of the high value collaborative work that's done in organizations is actually done by about 3 to 5% of the employee base. So there's a big imbalance and disconnect in the way that organizations are working.
Welcome to Tech Talks, the podcast brought to you by Nash Squared and hosted by myself, David Savage, that's been bringing you the latest thinking from technology leaders for over 8 years. Joining me today, we've got Amber. How are you?
I'm good. Good, thanks, Dave. How about you?
Yeah, good. You were due to be on the podcast last week, but unfortunately slept in. I totally missed the recording.
I did. That's so bad, isn't it? Like, should we do like a really early morning one? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. It's a Friday before work. Let's do it. And I didn't. That's really bad, isn't it?
What time did you wake up?
Dave, I can't say that.
Yeah, you can. No one at work listens. That's not good. But
okay, so this is my first time I've ever done this. I woke up at like about 9:35, which is
35 minutes. The world's going to fall apart.
Well, that's exactly what I thought was going to happen when I woke up today. If I woke up in a panic, not good, not good. And I missed the podcast. That's what I was more worried about.
Oh, sure, of course.
Well,
I believe that. Well, you know what? I think it's a sign that perhaps productivity, getting the most out of your staff, maybe they're pushing you too hard. It's all about a bit of balance here, making sure that the processes in place are correct. This is the most tenuous link ever, the fact that you slept in to try to talk about processes within an organisation. But here we go. This is the direction I'm going with, because today's guest, Sanj, is from Asana, and we're talking all about hybrid working and how organisations are getting collaboration and effective collaboration out of their staff. Were you collaborating effectively on that day after you had slept through your alarm?
Yes.
Good answer.
Thanks.
Anyway, we'll play the interview. We'll come back with some commentary on it afterwards.
This morning I'm talking to Asana Sanj Bahira, the GEM EMEA. How are you, first of all?
I'm great. I'm really good. Yeah, how are you getting on?
Yeah, good, thank you. Good. Thanks for taking some time to join me on the podcast this morning. Before anything else, Asana is a company that many people might not have heard of. So let's start there and ask you what they do.
Okay, great. Well, first of all, great to be here. So thank you for inviting me to this podcast, David. So very proud to represent Asana for this. And what Asana does, quite simply, is we are a platform that helps teams, departments, functions, and enterprises orchestrate their work. That may be a small project to a strategic initiative laddering up to goals. The company was founded in 2008, 15 years ago, by Dustin Moskovitz and Justin Rosenstein. And we're headquartered in San Francisco with almost 140,000 paying customers and millions of free users across about 200 countries and territories. Companies like Amazon, Japan Airlines, Sky, and Affirm all rely on Asana to manage everything from company objectives to how they manage their work and tasks across their different subs and business units.
How we manage work has obviously gone through a fairly rapid evolution over the last couple of years. And am I right in thinking that you've got some research that is highlighting some trends at the moment as well?
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. So at Asana, our mission is pretty simple. It's pretty simple, but it's pretty bold. It's to help humanity thrive by enabling the world's teams to work together. And part of how we do that is we do research. And over the past 4 years, we've been conducting a survey we survey about 10,000, between 9 and 10,000 knowledge workers across the US, UK, Australia, France, and Germany to really understand the impact of cross-functional collaboration and how work is being done. And what's really interesting is we've been doing this for the past 4 years. So we've been doing this sort of just at the start of the pandemic and throughout, and now coming out of the pandemic. And we've just released our 2023 Anatomy of Work Global Index, which you can find on our website. I'm more than happy to share some of the findings from that.
What do you think the key trends within that report are? I mean, and I don't want to be too prescriptive, but obviously hybrid has been a reality for many businesses now for 3 years or more. We're still grappling with barriers to productivity. I think some of your own statistics talk about 58% of work is still being spent on work about work or work coordination. I work for Nash Squared. Some of our own research points to the idea that what was good about the pandemic in terms of productivity is perhaps less good, and what was bad, perhaps mental health, is getting worse. What do you think the overall picture is?
Yeah, absolutely. I think hybrid work has certainly become the norm, but what we're seeing is a much greater scrutiny now around how that work is being done. So whilst during the pandemic, perhaps the priorities of many enterprises and organizations was to provide more collaboration through technology solutions, through more meetings, helping to enable their remote workforce to collaborate better. Now, fast forward to 2023, and we're seeing that that collaboration could be a lot more effective. We're still seeing, as you said, a large amount of work, about 58% of a knowledge worker's day is being lost to work coordination rather than skilled work. The other thing that we're seeing in that is that there's less and less time being spent on strategic work. So there's less understanding about how the work that you're doing really ladders up to the strategic goals of the company. We're seeing notification overload. That's something that I'm sure many of your listeners, certainly I am familiar with the proliferation of so many tools to drive collaboration. It's really hard to understand where to prioritize. And actually, we find that workers are spending more time responding to notifications. That's the priority. The message that comes in is the biggest priority right now. And we're also seeing that there's so much time being lost in duplicative work and meetings about meetings. And we're seeing such a rise in the number of tools that are being used, number of emails, number of video calls, and the sheer amount of meetings that are being done, which again is really kind of pulling us away from the actual high value work, the skilled work that many of the employees have been employed for.
And look, your own research points to the idea that improved processes could tackle some of these inefficiencies and say 4.2 hours a week is, you know, it's half a day's worth of work. That's quite significant, especially when we're talking about kind of 4 day weeks, perhaps in some instances. What do those processes look like? What are we talking about here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that amounts to something like 6 weeks a year, which is pretty surprising. And I think that the processes are more around sort of the ways in which we work. I think the typical thing that we would have done during the pandemic is to drive greater collaboration to have more meetings or to have more tools. But in fact, perhaps to have a greater collaboration is to have improved processes. To ask your teams the tough questions on, do you collaborate well? And more importantly, how can you get better at it? And what we find is that there's probably less time spent on understanding what is effective collaboration within an organization versus leaning on doing more collaboration. And I think the opportunity for so many companies is to really sort of unlock and understand what is both intelligent and effective collaboration within your organization.
Do you think many businesses understand or know what that is?
No, I think it's certainly when we look at our research, that's kind of where they are at the moment. They're really looking to understand what is the definition of effective collaboration? How does the work that my organization is doing ladder up to the goals and priorities and objectives of the business? And then taking the time to really understand the patterns of collaboration across your organization. I think often we think that everybody collaborates and as productive in the same way. But some of the research that we've done with our Work Innovation Lab has actually uncovered that, of course, the way that people work and the way that people collaborate is not as balanced as we might think. In fact, about 35% of the high value collaborative work that's done in organizations is actually done by about 3 to 5% of the employee base. So there's a big imbalance and disconnect in the way that organizations are working. And part of the reason for that is the lack of sort of guardrails and norms in how we should collaborate. I'll give you an example. Think about the number of different tools and apps that we're using right now to manage our work, whether that be our communication tools, our collaboration tools, our emails and our spreadsheets. The average is somewhere between about 10 and 15. And that's not changed that much since the pandemic started. Because those tools and platforms are rarely connected, and there are no sort of norms or guardrails onto what should be used for what, you get this proliferation of data being disconnected, and you're spending most of your time trying to find the right piece of data through the right tool. That's a great example of, you know, how disconnected we are and how inefficient we are because of the sheer proliferation of different tools. By setting some norms and some guardrails to say, hey, we use email for this, we use Asana for these tasks and these projects, we use Slack for internal communication or Teams. By setting those guardrails, you're able to better manage how your organization drives productivity through collaboration.
So one quick question I wanted to ask you to finish on. Your research points to 55% of workers at businesses that collaborate well report revenue growth rather over the last 3 years, almost double that of organizations that deem themselves not to be collaborative. What say you to organizations who, on reflection, go, well, let's just get everyone back in the office?
Yeah. It's very interesting where we are right now because companies are looking to drive efficiency through productivity. Yet, if you survey most of the employee base, they're working harder than they ever have before. So where's the disconnect? And I think that the place that many organizations is falling back to is let's get them back in the office, or let's have greater scrutiny and oversight into the work that people are doing. I'm not necessarily sure that's the right solution. I think it's not necessarily about where you work. I think it's about understanding how people work. And some of the insights from our 2023 Anatomy of Work survey just show the difference between workers at collaborative organizations versus workers at organizations that they don't think are collaborative. So as you said, 55% of workers at collaborative organizations report revenue growth over the past 3 years. That's 2x those who work at organizations that are seen as non-collaborative. Almost 80% of workers at collaborative organizations feel well prepared to respond to future challenges. That's 4 times that of those that work in weak organizations that have weak collaboration. And then finally, 92% of workers at collaborative organizations say their work has value. Mm. And that's versus just 50% of workers that have work in organizations with weak collaboration. So I think the difference is really stark. And when you have that level of alignment with company goals, where you feel that you're supporting the company objectives, ultimately that's leading to high levels of employee engagement, reducing down the amount of attrition and churn, and also burnout that we saw over the past couple of years as we came out of the pandemic.
Sanj, it's been a pleasure to speak to you. You mentioned that you might be able to share that research with us. If you could send it over to me, we will make sure that it is in the podcast show notes for people to find on their various different streaming platforms. But thank you very, very much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And I would love to invite your listeners to review that report. It's called the Anatomy of Work Report. And also check out on our website some of the content from our own research lab, the Work Innovation Lab, that a lot of this research emanated from.
We'll make sure there are links for people to find. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Right. There's a couple of things in here that I thought were worth pulling apart. In particular, collaboration isn't about more meetings, it's about better processes. Mm-hmm. I know that a lot of organizations have been talking post-pandemic about kind of we need to get productivity out of staff, whether that then is kind of time in the office or how do we work from home, etc. But this is the first time that I've heard someone go, you know, what's effective, what's intelligent and effective? And actually, this isn't about more meetings. And I would put in-office culture into the bracket of more meetings. It's about better process. And actually, process could be working from home or working in the office.
Mm. Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think we've all had it, haven't we, where we've been sat on a meeting and put together like a plan or put together some sort of like idea of how we're going to go and approach something. Whereas actually, the better way to sort of go about things is actually just to go and like approach it sort of head on. So we've all been there before.
And I think part of the problem is that a lot of working, whether we're in the office or working hybrid, is actually quite similar at the minute. Yes, in the office you sat next to each other and therefore you have those little kind of conversations and whatever else, and it's good to see people. Of course it is, we're human. But the points that he makes around the number of tools and applications that we use to work, 10 to 15. We're never all going to be in an office anymore. And even prior to the pandemic, we were working with colleagues in different locations. And the fact is now we've got so many different tools and applications that his points were around, you know, data is disconnected. So you're spending more time finding and connecting data. And therefore, that's driving down effective collaboration and the ability to therefore be productive is a really good one. Because We do need to consolidate. We do need to think about how we use those tools and not just be kind of like, right, now I'm going to be on Teams. Now I'm going to be on this. Now I'm going to be on that. Now I'm going to be on, you know, and there's so many different ways of working now and different parts of your business using different things for different reasons leads to kind of a lot of time of, oh, hang on a minute. How many times have you been on a call, for example, and someone's been like, hang on, where's this? Mm. Jumping around from different windows.
Oh, all the time. I do it myself as well. I know I'm guilty of that. So, I think it's one of those things where there's almost like there's loads and loads of different tools, which is great. But then, as you said, if you're not using them to the best of their abilities, or everyone's on like a bit of a different wavelength, like some people have stuff that they use all the time, like obviously Teams for us. But then you go to have a call with other companies. Like, for example, I was speaking to a manager the other day and they don't use Teams in their business and they've got all these other different apps and applications that they work with. So it's then having to adjust to a way that they work, and then you move on to another company and they might use other things altogether. So it's great to have all these different options, but actually sometimes it does kind of overcomplicate things a little bit. Mm. And for us internally, everyone's got sort of different things that they sort of naturally use more than others. So again, it's I guess trying to sort of like find something that works for everyone,
yeah.
But without sort of like making it massively complicated, so it actually, in fact, doesn't work for anybody.
And there's that kind of slightly startling statistic that Sanj tells us: 35% of high value collaboration is done by 3 to 5% of the employee base. Is that the 3 to 5%? That are using fewer apps? Is that the 3 to 5% that are largely on the same tools and apps as everybody else? Like, it'd be interesting to know why it is that 3 to 5% that gets that high collaboration or high value collaboration done.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's a really interesting point, actually. I think, I don't know. I don't really know on that, Dave. That's really interesting. I haven't really thought of that, to be honest. I think there was quite a few things that came from this. Obviously, like you say, you had some really sort of like good kind of like nuggets of like almost like little like gold nuggets, do you know what I mean, like of like these stats that you kept sort of jumping and dropping in there. But I don't know how you sort of tackle this as well. Like say some people will still have this approach or this mindset of like working from home is better, and everyone's got this whole sort of thing of what works for them. So how do you then kind of bring that all together to have like high collaboration in a business where everyone's going to be doing different things and has their own sort of processes that work best for them? You don't want to make it like mandatory or make it like one rule fund kind of for everyone. but you must use this application, you must be in the office on this day, because then obviously collaboration and productivity actually might be sort of like go down, I guess. But I don't really know how you can have everyone doing all different things and then still keep it like a really high performing or, you know, highly productive environment.
Yeah. Now, here's a question for you. If you're going to be a high performing environment, like you just said, you need to be in a good frame of mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
What helps you keep your mental health in a positive place, allowing you to be productive and maybe not sleeping through alarms?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So like exercise, getting out. I try to have like a walk in the morning. Like it's nothing too strenuous. It's just a quick, like, you know, go around the block once, get some fresh air. I like to do like a mini commute, like a bit of a fake commute, just to make sure like I actually get up and I get out and I, my mind kind of switches on.
What about music?
I'm really strange with this. So if I listen to music whilst I work, I physically cannot concentrate on the music.
Oh no, but if we take work out the out of kind of out of it for a second, and we're just talking about mental health and looking after your mental health.
Oh, okay. Then yeah, then music's great. Oh,
ever heard of the theory of resonance?
No, I haven't. Absolutely.
So this is the idea based in science that if you're sad, you listen to sad music. Like when you're going through heartbreak, you listen to sad music because it helps you feel better.
Yeah, I have heard that. I didn't know it was called that, but I have heard of like people saying about that before.
Yep. Okay, so our second guest and the second interview on today's podcast is with Ariana, who's the founder of Spoke. Spoke is a music app that looks after your mental health. So the idea being that if you need confidence, so a confidence boost for an interview, it gives you a playlist of music that helps raise your confidence levels. If you are feeling down or you're feeling, you know, however you're feeling, it gives you the playlist. Say you want to fall asleep quickly and you're struggling to sleep.
Mm.
It gives you a playlist of music to help you fall asleep.
Oh, that's so clever. That's really clever.
Tailored to you as well.
I really like that. Do you know what? I've got something similar on my Spotify, probably not as clever as this, but I've got different.
Not based in science.
Well, definitely not based in science. I've made it myself, and I'm absolutely no science. You could probably tell. And I've just done like what is there? So it's like different playlists based on different ways I'm feeling or reactions I need or things I might need on that day. But obviously, I've just put a load of random tracks in there and hopes it helps. But that sounds really cool. Really, really cool.
So in this, Ariana talks about the fact that wellness is often kind of thought of as an industry of being kind of older, white, middle class. And some people outside of that demographic might think wellness, well, that's not for me. But we're talking about mental health here. And if we can help people protect their mental health at an early stage, that can obviously prevent crisis. So what Spoke is all about is helping people metabolize emotion. So you're less likely to be overwhelmed, you're less likely to be anxious, you're less likely to be stressed, therefore you're more likely to be able to sleep better, perform better, collaborate perhaps, not sleep in and miss the podcast.
Oh gosh, not going to let you. No, that sounds really cool actually, and I think that would be really effective for a lot of people, because people do rely on music a lot, don't they? Just to sort of like pick up their mood or just, I don't know, people sort of like really connect to music, so I think they'll really... This will be, yeah, I think a lot of people will find a lot of help in this, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, in the best way, but I think people really find this helpful.
Before I press play then on the interview, what's a song recommendation to help people feel good, feel lively? What's on that playlist, Amber?
Okay, so this is a really cheesy one, but I really like it. So I've got a lot of S Club on there. Or one that always kind of gets me
classic.
In a good mood is Unwritten by Natasha Bedingfield.
Oh, yeah, okay, fair enough.
I just clean slate. Oh, if I'm feeling a bit stressed, I'm like, right, it's all good. You're fine.
Well, look, there's Amber's unscientific approach. Now we'll switch over to the scientific approach. So I'm joined now by Ariana, founder and co-CEO of Spoke. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. Looking forward to the bank holiday weekend.
It is just before the Easter bank holiday weekend. And whilst I know that you have an interest in health and wellness. I hope that you're going to be indulging in some chocolate. And
oh, you don't. Yeah, you don't need to worry about that. I'll be eating plenty.
Good. Look, thanks for taking some time to chat to me today. Before we get into anything else, do you want to explain who Spoke are?
Yeah, of course. So Spoke is currently the UK's leading music-led mental wellness app. We work with the UK's best musicians. They're trained to bake proven mental health tools into their music and into their lyricism. And our whole message is that we try to bring the soul back to self-care.
And when you say bake mental health or mental wellness into their music, mm-hmm. I'm assuming we're not saying, hey, you know, here's a piece of software that tells us that if we have this particular chord cadence or chord progression, this is going to be good for the people listening to it. What are we really talking about here?
Okay, so this is based on years of research. So we, and just maybe for a little bit of context, we are targeting, so, and this is millions and millions of people worldwide who do not currently connect with current wellness practices, wellness culture. You know, they maybe wouldn't be doing regular meditation, mindfulness, yoga, all of that, but they are big music fans and they do want to listen to their favorite artists. At the same time, musicians want to be positive role models of good mental health. And so we are a perfect vehicle and platform for them to do that because we train them. So we spent 18 months building a system, and it's completely unique to us, where artists will learn. So let's say, for example, you're an artist and you come to work with Spoke. We'd first get to know a little bit about you and your passion. So maybe you care about anxiety for young people who are going through career changes or career stress. Through the system that's based on over 24 different experts, from clinical psychologists, neuroscientists, you know, career relationship experts, you name it, you will learn a set of tools that you can then use in either your music, if you're an instrumentalist, so yes, the right kind of chords, tones, frequency, you name it, in your production, and then in your lyricism. So you'll learn how to put the right positive psychology, the right CBT tools, the right mindfulness techniques, all these different types of techniques. You'll learn how to include it in your lyricism whilst maintaining it authentic to your own voice. You are not going to sound like what's already out there. You are still going to retain your personality. You know, it should sound like something that will go on an album of yours. And that's how we work. And then everything that goes into our app is essentially a curation of lots of different instrumentals, lyrics, producers, and then our system will weave everything together in a personalized way for the listener. So you can go, yeah.
I suppose it's interesting you talk about this point that, you know, it's not the usual crowd, you know, the people or people who do not connect normally with mental health and wellness. Ever since I can remember, if I think about being a teenager and kind of Snow Patrol being on the radio and people going, oh God, don't listen to them, you know, it's so depressing, or, you know, you listen to particular types of music depending on the mood that you're in or you want to work out, so you have music that kind of gets you in the right frame of mind and the right kind of state to do that exercise. We've always intrinsically linked music to health. Why is it that this hasn't been more tangibly linked or codified in the way that you're suggesting now?
Yeah, so that's a brilliant question. And we have always turned to music to look after our mental health. All the lyrics of your favourite songs when you were 14, 15, 16, you're going to remember those for the rest of your life. So it is actually incredible. So I guess that's just a proof in point that it's very important what you listen to, because it does affect you and you do remember it. The difference is that most of the times artists won't, they'll put a message and a narrative, and like you say, you listen to Snow Patrol, if you're, you know, you might be feeling depressed, it will help you because it will sometimes mimic that mood. So it's a theory of resonance. So you, if you're feeling, you know, angry, listening to angry music is going to help because it's going to allow you to metabolize that emotion. So when you're heartbroken, you're going to listen to sad music, and so that will help. So that's a theory. So we can, you do that naturally, but we can use that theory to make sure, and not just that, but lots of other theories, to make sure that what you're given 100% will hit the mark every time. So just as an example, right now we have on average across all our users, about 20, 25,000 people, we've got 2 hours of listening time per week on average. So that means, and people are tuning into Spoke instead of their regular music platforms, not as a replacement, but because they know that if they're feeling a certain way or they need to feel more confident for, you know, an exam or a job interview, they know that they can put in that, you know, they can put that into the system and it will give you something that is very likely and it works to hit the mark. And so that's what we mean. It's not that there's anything wrong with music in general, never, you know, it's the artistic expression is one of the most important things on earth. But what we can do is make sure that it is really fulfilling that purpose of helping you with what you need at that time. And that is that's a different intention to just, hey, I want to listen to my favorite artist's album, or I want to explore new music. It's just a different intention, but it's an intention that's growing rapidly.
And just to clarify, when you have a look on, say, the App Store, the kind of the screenshots of the app, you know, it's things like fall asleep in minutes, relax and wind down, improve focus for deep work. So this is taking your musical preferences and then serving you tailored but scientific playlists that help in those particular states of mind.
Exactly. And knowing that everything on the app has been specifically created for that intention as well. So we create everything in-house with our team of artists.
So when we talk about the wellness crowd and we talk about kind of people who would normally connect with this industry, who do we mean there and who are we trying to reach?
Yes, so in terms of wellness, and I spent many years working in wellness, so I know it very well. And I guess it's, you know, it's a typically older, middle class, predominantly white crowd. And once again, I'm never saying there's anything wrong with that, because different crowds will merge towards different things, and that's fine. However, the problem is that the wellness world, which only some demographics merge towards, it holds all of these important tools that lots of people will just never experience or access because they're wrapped in a culture that doesn't resonate with them. It's not the tool's fault. It's not the fault of mindfulness, meditation, you know, therapy, CBT, or it's not. That's not the problem. The problem is that lots of people will just never try any of that stuff because they're like, well, that's not for me. You know, I don't see myself in that world at all. So I'm just never going to end up accessing these tools. But we now know that these are early stage preventative wellness tools that if you incorporate into your lifestyle can prevent crisis. And they do prevent crisis if you have a mental wellness habit and you learn how to metabolize emotion frequently, you're less likely to feel overwhelmed and you're less likely to, you know, make poor decisions. So that's the area that I'm passionate about. It's not about changing. It's about creating something new that's different that can finally meet all these people where they're at.
So you're helping artists talk about this. You're helping make sure that music is available. But what if you are a 28-year-old, maybe white male, but from a lower socioeconomic background who typically wouldn't be in that crowd that we're describing? How do you get them to be aware of Spoke and start using the app and kind of connecting?
Yeah, so I will just mention that, you know, in terms of our targeting and who we go for, we are not... We know who the harder to reach people are in this world, you know, and we know that, and we are building something that we believe can connect better to those who are harder to reach. But in terms of who gravitates towards Spoke, it's all kinds of people of all different ages and all different backgrounds, because it's music. So what we've, and we never kind of go out as a brand saying, you know, we are only for these people or these.
Totally, totally. And I characterize the kind of the persona that I have purely because, you know, if you look at statistics, it tends to be that, you know, if you think about male suicide between certain ages, there's some alarming stats for that demographic. So if that's the group who aren't talking about this, how might you reach them with an app that I suppose typically wouldn't be something that they'd go, aha, this is for me?
Yeah, so there's a lot of research on male suicide, and this is something I'm very interested in. So the Samaritans did a report a few years ago, which basically said that the best way to meet young men where they're at is through lifestyle, stuff that is already, you know, apparent in their lifestyle. Sports and music are the two main facets. So they found that those were the two areas that could have the most impact. So just as an example, I know a really amazing organization called Football Beyond Borders that does, and I'm sure you know them, you know, it's football leagues for young men, and yep. coaches are therapists. And it's like, that's brilliant. It's baked into something that is, you know, normal. We're just doing it in music. So we are not going to be the tool for absolutely everybody, but we are going to be the tool for people who already love music and who already turn to music. We're just going to appeal to them. Somebody who actually doesn't really care for music that much, we just might not be for them. We can't serve everybody. But yeah. we do have a very strong belief and thesis that, you know, by working with the right artists, by creating, you know, genuinely amazing music, really well produced, amazing hooks, really amazing beat, like catchy melodies, amazing lyricism, it's going to become popular and people are going to listen to it because it feels good to listen to it. And then you're going to learn all this amazing stuff while you do. So that's kind of our theory.
Look, it's been fascinating to talk. I alluded to the fact that the app was available for people to download. Anything else that you point people towards whilst you got the chance?
Yeah, I mean, the app's available to download on iOS and Android. Just type in Spoke or Spoke Music and it will come up straight away. And I guess the only thing that I want to mention is, you know, this is a growing field of research, and we are, the only way that we are going to grow is by working with the right people. I always say that we're looking to partner with amazing artists who care about this. You know, we have so many artists who hear me speak on panels or podcasts. They're like, I had no idea that I could do something like this. Well, if your values are aligned with ours, then please do get in touch, you know, hello@spoke.world. Partners, we want to partner with aligning brands as well. And that's what I'd like to leave with.
Thank you very much for your time, Arianna, and enjoy the Easter weekend.
Thank you so much, Dave.